Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms. We unfortunately do not have my good friend and regular co-host Tyler Orzynski, aka Tyler O, for this episode. He's got some real life stuff he's got to attend to, but we have John Arrington from DLF joining the program to talk about everything that went down at the 2026 NFL Combine, talk through some different players who are either risers or fallers based off of their performance in athletic testing and the drills and stuff. All sorts of goodness to dig into. We're going to go position by position, talk about some specific names, maybe, you know, figure out where they land in each of our rookie rankings so far. Tons of good stuff. But before we do that, of course, John, how you doing? And is there anything that you want to let everybody know about sort of your process when it comes to evaluating these rookies, different things like that to kind of set the table? The floor is yours.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be back. Appreciate you guys having me back. Obviously wish it was under better circumstances, but it kind of works out, even though we obviously, you know, wish that Tyler could be here with us. I was here for you when you were at the Senior Bowl. So I took your spot and we talked about the rookies. So I kind of helped Tyler along introducing the listeners to the rookies. Well, here we are. We're still talking about the rookies, baby. You know, we're in like the next step of the, you know, the in line. And so it kind of works out perfectly. You know, everything happens for a reason. I'm a big believer in that. But, you know, as far as my process, I'm a very big analytics nerd. I get into all of that nerdy metrics stuff that you probably, you know, some of the listeners probably love, some of the listeners probably hate, but I promise you, I'm not just the guy that looks at one stat and goes, that guy's going to be amazing because of that one stat. I really do a deep dive. I've done a lot of research on these guys and on these metrics and things over years and years, trying to perfect my process and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it might not be perfect just yet, but hey, I'm always working and trying to make it better, or, you know, see what I can do. But I tell you, there's a lot of guys that stand out. And part of that process is the combine, you know, is the 40 times, the burst scores, like things like that. And so, you know, some people say, oh, it doesn't matter. Some people say it's the only thing that matters. I look at it as a piece of the puzzle. But, you know, it's really nice to get that piece and then be able to put it into the puzzle and be like, ah, here we go. We actually have real numbers now.
Absolutely. You know, anytime we get to back up what we see on film with actual measured data, it just completes a picture. It helps us get closer to what may be the truth for a lot of these NFL teams and helps us kind of figure out where these guys are going to be drafted. And I think that a good place to start this conversation is at the quarterback position. Obviously, the number one name in this class, Fernando Mendoza from Indiana University, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, didn't do anything. He showed up, but no running the 40, nothing like that. No taking place in, you know, no participating in on-field drills, but, you know, he didn't really have to. We're pretty sure he's going to get picked first by the Raiders. So it's absolutely fine that he didn't do anything. Best of luck to him as they start to figure things out now with new head coach Clint Kubiak coming over from the Seahawks. Hopefully that offense takes a step forward. But after him, I think, at least in terms of my rankings, and especially based off of everything we saw in Indianapolis, my tier one at quarterback is just Mendoza by himself. And then my tier two is Ty Simpson from Alabama by himself. I think the fact that he only has those 15 college starts is going to trip up a lot of people. I think that teams might not be super stoked about throwing him out there immediately, like in 2026, but I liked what he did in that throwing session, and I think that he did a pretty good job, especially with, you know, a lot of ball placement stuff and just chucking those long bombs for sure. And it kind of solidified his status as a dude who's going to go in the first round, basically no matter what happens, barring some like crazy off-field thing. Like, do you get that same impression based off of what we saw out of Simpson over the weekend? And do you also have him as sort of like a standalone QB2, or do you have him in a cluster with some of those other guys?
Yeah, so I'm with you. I technically do not have a QB or a QB in tier one. So I have Fernando Mendoza in a tier by himself in tier two. And then I have Ty Simpson in a tier by himself in tier three. But then I start getting into the other ones. So I'm with you on that. It's just, I don't consider Mendoza a tier one QB. He just doesn't quite, everything I do is for fantasy purposes. I'm not sitting, Beth is not, for, you know, my model, Beth is not for the NFL. It's for fantasy football, dynasty, yeah. Fantasy football. So when I say a tier one QB, I'm saying for fantasy purposes, I don't view Mendoza as that. He has mobility. He has things that you like to see, but I don't know that he's really going to go out there and truly be running or doing anything that we're going to be saying, oh my God, he's adding an extra, you know, 100 points a year for his rushing, yeah. And all that kind of, we're not going to see Josh Allen out there, anything like that. Although he did weigh in very nicely, perfect size that you want to see. I think it was Mendoza 6'4.5", 225 pounds. So, woo-hoo. I mean, he obviously has the size that you like to see. Simpson's a little smaller, 6'1", 211. So that's not as nice, but he actually does have a little more of the mobility, even though he didn't really truly run a lot in college. He didn't have that many opportunities to do it. He probably wasn't even asked to do it that much at Alabama, you know, and he kind of used his like dink and dunk game more than anything else. But to answer your question about the combine, I do think they've solidified themselves with the combine testing and everything, even though neither one of them truly did that many tests. But, you know, the little bit of passing that you did see from Simpson and everything, I think at this point we're pretty much solidified that those are the two. Obviously, you have people getting excited about some of the other QBs like Carson Beck, Diego Pavia, Garrett Nussmeier, even Drew Allar. You know, people are always been excited for 4 years I've been hearing about Drew Allar as a Devy player, Devy analyst, and how he was going to be the QB1 in the class. For years, it's just, that's all it was. All right, so you got Drew Allar, he's the QB1 in the class, but then he never did anything. He never became QB1 in the class. But people point to that arm strength and say, what if? Well, unfortunately, we've had a lot of years of what if, and it never came to fruition.
It is a little bit of a bummer. And, you know, one of the things that I had put down in my combine preview that I wrote over at ftnfantasy.com, be sure to go over to the website and check out, probably not the preview anymore since the combine already happened, but I did post a combine review article going over some of the stuff we're going to touch on in today's episode. And I said, Aller really needed to go out there and just, you know, kind of like look healthy, look at least somewhat competent. And I think he did pretty well as the session wore on. Like, he didn't light the world on fire or anything, but I think he did a decent job of helping himself. But when it comes to that next group of guys, like you're talking about, you know, I think Carson Beck from Miami was also pretty good. I think that, you know, Cade Klubnik had some pretty nice throws as well, the quarterback out of Clemson. But it is a bit of a hodgepodge. Garrett Nussmeier, another name that you had mentioned. When it comes to that next group and some of the stuff that we were able to see, did you get any sort of separation from those individuals in that, you know, sort of tier? And do you have sort of a favorite among that, you know, little group?
So I have this thing where, you know, like, I try not to hate on players. Obviously, they're more athletic than I could ever even imagine being, even the worst ones and things. So I try not to hate on players, but I choose one player every year that I'm going to hate on no matter what, because it's usually because people overvalue that player. And I look at it and go, how is that even possible? It's not always the same position. Sometimes it's QB, sometimes it's running back, whatever. The first player I ever remember hating was Tank Bigsby. I never saw it. I didn't understand why people loved him. And I said, you know, this was years, like his like second, third year in college. I'm sitting there going like, why are people hyping this guy? Because there were people saying he was as good as Bijan Robinson. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Long story short, I've had others. I've had Will Levis and I've had some others. Garrett Nussmeier is this year's hate. This year, you know, the hit player that I hate. I don't see it. I have not seen it. There's never been a point where I've said Garrett Nussmeier is the guy. He's going to be a stud. And so maybe I'm a little biased. What I saw at the combine was not good. I don't know if you have a differing opinion. It seemed like he was at the very least shaky with his throws and things like that. You know, maybe he kind of like calmed down later on. But I haven't seen anything to change my mind about Garrett Nussmeier. Carson Beck is kind of a he's just a big question mark, because he has put games together where you see, hey, maybe he could be the guy, and then he completely falls apart in other games. I really think when it's all said and done, he's a league-wide backup, you know, like he is an NFL backup player. And that's why, like I said, Fernando Mendoza's in a tier, Ty Simpson's in another tier, and then we have a tier break to these guys. So like Carson Beck technically comes in as my QB3. That doesn't mean that I'm like, oh man, Carson Beck to the moon, baby.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, Beck, at least from everything that I've been reading, probably did well enough to solidify his status as that third guy, but I don't read anything that says anything higher than maybe sneaking into the back end of day two or anything like that. It would be shocking for him to go much higher than that. And honestly, dude, when it comes to your assessment of Nussmeier, I'm right there with you. Like, having been there in Mobile, like watching him in those practice sessions, like when he doesn't feel rushed and he really steps into his throws and actually goes through the mechanics, he's pretty good. But there are just a lot of times where he's a little bit antsy and just does not have that element of ball placement that you look for. And I think even some of the drills showed that. There were a couple throws that I was like, bro, this this is not what you want to be putting out there for these scouts to see. But then also, I don't know if you know, caught this on the broadcast, but I remember there was a point in between, I think, when the quarterbacks finished up doing certain stuff, and then when they went over to receivers, it was Rich Eisen, Charles Davis at the desk with Ian Rappaport. And they'd asked him about Nussmeier. And the answer he gave was like kind of weird and like a little bit, you know, kind of frustrated almost, because of the fact that I guess whatever information is out there about this knee issue that he had is still something that, like, I guess he's disclosing to some degree about some of those specifics, but like, I remember Rappaport specifically saying, he was like, well, we didn't really know. We thought he was just bad. Like, I didn't know that this game was as bad as it was. But yeah, I mean, how much is that still playing into things? Honestly, that's kind of one of my questions.
Well, you know, and we've seen it with other players that we'll get into, like Jonah Coleman, kind of, you hear similar things where like he had an injury, even though he never missed time and, you know, nothing ever happened. It's the same thing with Nussmeier, like never missed time. You're talking about over the course of an entire season. And yes, his numbers did drop off a little bit this year. It wasn't some substantial drop off to where we can say, oh, obviously he was hurt. I feel like it's copium, you know, but once again, I have chosen this player as my player to hate, so I'm a little biased, but I view it as copium. I mean, he was never that guy. Even last year when he was supposedly healthy, go look at his numbers. He was not some amazing quarterback. And he's been sitting there with, you know, quality wide receivers, tight ends, players that we would like. And yet, you know, he hasn't really been able to put it all together. I mean, even if you want to give him a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, sometimes I'll do that. You know, I'll just give like a manual boost just because I'm like, hey, maybe I'm being too rough on this guy. Maybe he was injured. Even if I do that, he's not bumping up into tier one or anything like that. Like, we're like, I guess best case scenario in his scenario would be maybe he got into tier two, but I don't even see that. And that would be me saying I'm going to forgive every single bad thing he's ever done in his life.
It would be a bit of a stretch at that point. So yeah, definitely fair. I think that makes a lot of sense when it comes to Nussmeier. But when we talk about the quarterback position, we can't move on without bringing up what Talen Green from Arkansas did. I think a lot of people are going to look at that 40 time, you know, 4.36 seconds for a dude of his size is obscenely fast. And he did showcase his arm strength pretty well. That was something that we saw a lot of at the Senior Bowl as well. But he kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, the goofy sort of nickname that I had for him when I was down there in Mobile was, we have Joe Milton at home. You know, just sort of like, he's a big guy. He definitely has the frame. He definitely has the strength to throw a decent ball. But in terms of where that ball is ultimately going to go, that's still not something that we can really tell if throw to throw, unfortunately. But do you think what he did was good enough for a team to, you know, just look at that athletic profile and say, you know what, maybe we could teach this kid how to throw a little bit better, because if he figures out even parts of that, he could be an absolute game changer with his legs.
I would hope that teams have learned their lesson from Anthony Richardson, and, you know, like, but I at the same time, I wouldn't put it past the team falling in love with the athleticism. You know, if A. Rich went at what, fourth overall in the NFL draft, then Taylen Green breaks his records and everything. So I guess, you know, he's got to go at least what, third or second overall or something. So all kidding aside, I unfortunately don't think he's a QB. I have him on C2C teams. You know, I roster him in leagues. I actually will be bringing him over to the NFL side in those C2C leagues. And yet I'm not overly excited about that. You know, I don't even know if he'll make my team when it's all said and done, when I have to cut down to 40 or 35 or whatever I have to do. Obviously athletic as can be, and that has always been evident. He's been a fun C2C player. He scores points in college. The problem is, you know, he just doesn't have, he doesn't have the completion rate you're looking for. He doesn't, you know, his adjusted yards per attempt in his best season are 7.9. I generally look for 8-9 as my lowest. You know, like I remember Daniel Jones had an adjusted rate, in college around a 9. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to put that as like my threshold. Like at the lowest, I want you to be Daniel Jones, and he's not Daniel Jones. You know? So that's kind of like when you're looking at these thresholds, like Fernando Mendoza in his best season was at 10.5. And I believe that was this year. I'm 99% sure that was this year. Ty Simpson, 8.5. So not nearly as good as Mendoza, but obviously better than Taylen Green, you know, there. And adjusted yards per attempt is not the end all be all, but it is a pretty solid stat. His QBR is not there. You know, he's just not the greatest passer of the ball. And he has a pretty high, like when he does throw, he has like a 3% interception rate. So not only, you know, he's not really safe with the ball either. So he's kind of like gunslingerish, but not necessarily in a good way. All that being said, I wish that he would. I know it's not the fun thing to say. It's not like the PC thing to say, but I wish he would change positions and go be a tight end. But
I mean, you know, clearly he has the athletic testing to do that. I mean, it would be pretty cool. He's definitely big enough.
they asked him at the combine after, like, you know, they're gushing over his numbers and everything, and they're like, oh my God, you're like the most athletic man ever, which is pretty true. But then they go, you know, any thoughts about like trying a different position? He goes, no, I'm a quarterback. And it's like, I get saying that because you're trying to get paid quarterback money. You're trying to be a quarterback. You spent your entire life. Once again, I'm not downplaying, like, this man is much better at football than I ever will be. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think he's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, probably not. I feel very similarly. I mean, you don't earn the "We have Joe Milton at home" nickname without, you know, bringing a little bit of skepticism to the table.
And we were at that Senior Bowl together with Milton, watching those throws. Unfortunately, I didn't make it to this year's Senior Bowl, so I didn't get a chance to watch Green there in person. But if it's anything like Joe Milton at home, I'm a little scared.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it does not matter if you are that good of an athlete. It doesn't matter if those testing numbers are insane. If the underlying skills aren't there, then we probably shouldn't be that interested for fantasy purposes. But a player that I don't think that mindset applies to, get a load of that segue. We're talking about the running backs. And the first name that I really want to highlight is not Jeremiah Love from Notre Dame. He did pretty well. I mean, I don't think he did anything to ruin his stock. His teammate Jadarian Price also did pretty well. Definitely an exciting name that we might end up talking about here in a little bit. But Mike Washington Jr., my dude from Arkansas. Before I even talk about what he did at the combine, he is somebody that we got a chance to talk to a little bit down at the Senior Bowl on the field doing some of that interview type stuff. And he is, well, A, just a nice person. I thought that was kind of nice. I always like it when these guys are friendly. But also just being there on field level and just seeing his frame, dude. He is an absolutely physically imposing man, especially like with how long and jacked his arms are. Dude, I was enamored by what I saw down there watching that stuff. But then he comes out and runs this 40 time that just breaks the scale. You know, according to our buddy over there at FTN, Brian Knowles, he published an article about speed score and, you know, sort of updating with the guys from 2026 and putting it in historical context. And it turns out Washington at his size with that speed that he ran in the 40 yard, like, tied the all-time speed score record, basically. Like, he is an absolute unit. I am still very surprised that he was able to put together 4.33 seconds, even though when we were at the Senior Bowl, they have those, you know, little tracker devices that they have that measure miles per hour and stuff. I do remember there was a specific day where Washington hit, I think it was 21.02 miles per hour at his top sprint speed. But, like, I didn't think it was going to end up at 4.33 in the 40-yard time. And the way that he reacted on the sidelines, you know, after he was running his reps, I think he was a little bit surprised, too. But point being, I already knew that he was pretty fast. But now that I know that he is that fast and that big and definitely has enough pass-catching chops to the point that I think he really could be a three-down back at the next level, tell me if this is spicy or not. I have moved Mike Washington all the way up to my RB2 in this class. I think I'm really bought into this. I really liked what I saw in Mobile. I like what we saw at the Combine. Was the results of these, you know, testing measures at the Combine enough for you to feel that way? Or in your mind, do you think that that might be like double counting his speed or anything like that? Just where are you at when it comes to Mike Washington?
No, I'm 100% with you. I mean, first of all, he passes the Herms test, so you know that, you know, that's step one. But you know, the big thing is, and you know, people say don't double count the combine, and that's why I love my process, because I'm not double counting anything. I project a speed score for a player, and then when we get the actual speed score, I put that in. If it's different than what I was projecting, then that's not double counting. That's, they were faster than I projected. If it's exactly the same or very similar than what I projected, then okay, you know, like, nothing's going to change. Mike Washington hit a different world, a different realm than what we expected. If you know the movie Top Gun Maverick, and you know, and Maverick, closer to the beginning of the movie, he's in that jet, whatever it is, and he's hitting Mach 10, and then Hondo goes, "He's the fastest man alive." That's what I did when I watched Mike Washington run that 40 time. I'm just sitting there with like a tear in my eye, like, "He's the fastest man alive." And I mean, it's just a different, you have to count it. If you want to call it double counting, whatever, you have to count it. He is much faster than anyone gave him credit for, including my co-host on the Devi Devotional, Aaron Wilcox. He's the film grinder of our podcast. I'm the analytics nerd, along with another analytics nerd and Andy Starr. And we're sitting there going like, hey man, his big time run rate was great. Like, everything really looked good this season. It's a weird profile. We can get into that more if you'd like to, but a really weird profile. We cannot say this is the perfect running back or anything like that. But we saw the athleticism in the numbers at Arkansas this year. And then when he went and did that, it was just like, he's the fastest man alive.
Honestly, it was just absolutely incredible. You know, kind of like I was saying before, I think even his reaction, I mean, like, I, tears of joy, just how blown away he was, mm-hmm. even by going out and doing that. But, you know, I do think it is kind of important for listeners, though, who may not know a ton about Washington, to know a little bit about some of that backstory and his journey through college football. So if you want to just give everybody a quick crash course, by all means.
Well, the crazy part is that he was at G5. He was at G5 program in Buffalo, was not good. In fact, you could even say he was very bad at football at the G5 program, did that for years. And then he transfers up. He started playing better, but he still got outplayed by another running back that we have in this class, in Seth McGowan. Seth McGowan actually did that. Now, if you look at McGowan's numbers, he didn't have the high end speed. He ran a 4.49, but he's also at 6'2", 223, so very similar size. But his burst numbers were actually the best of the running backs. 42.5 vertical, which is ridiculous at 223 pounds and 6 feet tall, and a 10.11 broad jump. So those burst numbers. So now, don't. that doesn't mean I'm all of a sudden excited about McGowan. That's just one thing. But it was really weird. Like I said, it was a weird prospect profile for Washington. But then this year he goes to Arkansas. And then finally in the SEC, the most difficult competition he's ever had, he's a stud. He's breaking off big runs, you know, like, and a lot of people say, hey, it's because of Talen Green, or at least Talen Green helped, you know, open up holes for him and things by having the option and whatever else. And that's probably true. But I mean, you don't, like, this is one of those things where you can't put the toothpaste back in the container. You know, you see that athleticism, you have to at least be a little excited. You said you had moved him up to RB2. I technically haven't done that yet, but the way that I do my process, draft capital does matter for running backs. I have a feeling when it's all said and done, he will at the very least be my RB3 and very well could be my RB2.
The dude's absolutely incredible. And also special shout out to those OG New Mexico State teams, because like, but in addition to, you know, the two of those guys, McGowan and Washington, they also had Diego Pavia there for a little bit. So like, hey, they were onto something down there.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, like, absolutely incredible. Good job on their part. But when it comes to some of these other running backs, not everybody went out there and did some historic performance. There are other guys who probably did a little bit more harm than good to their prospect outlook. And I think that that is most glaringly true for Nebraska running back Emmett Johnson. Yeah, when I saw him on tape, I was like, okay, this dude's pretty electric. Like, he does make pretty good cuts and he breaks free pretty well. But I really needed to know, like, A, just how fast he was, B, sort of how he would do, like, agility wise, especially in some of those pass catching drills, and also just like how big he was too, because he is a little bit of a smaller back. He really needed to do well with some of those other, you know, speed-based and agility-based things to sort of make up for that. And I don't think it worked out the way that he was looking for. Johnson ends up running a 4.56 40-yard time that was the, I believe, slowest of any running back at the combine this year. And I'll be honest, like, he looked pretty sound in receiving drills. I can definitely see more of what people are talking about when it comes to his pass catching profile, but he wasn't so crisp and clean with some of those breaks to the point that I'm like, oh, this dude is like a huge big time weapon out of the backfield as a receiver either. So I know a lot of people were talking about him as a guy who could be like a big sleeper in this class. And some people were really putting him high up inside their top five, even further than that. But at this point, after everything that we saw and the fact that the athletic testing didn't really match a lot of the stuff that we saw on film, I've currently got him at like my RB10. I don't think he did so poorly that he shouldn't be in the NFL. Like, I still think that he is a good football player, but maybe not quite the guy who's going to emerge with day two capital and surprise everybody anymore.
Yeah, I think I have him at RB7 after his testing numbers. I didn't have him. I projected him originally for a 4.52, and he ran a 4.56. So he didn't like substantially drop because of that. His burst numbers weren't amazing. He was actually, and I actually just posted a video on Twitter, and I said, you know, like, you got to give him props. He was literally the only running back that ran every single combine exercise. Yeah. And yet no one else did every single one, but I don't know why he did it, because he did poorly at each one. And it's like, what? I mean, I guess you're just trying to prove that you're like the guy that's never going to give up or quit or whatever. But, you know, you're going out and you're running a slower three cone than DK Metcalf, except for your 6'2" 202 instead of 6'3" 228 or whatever DK is. Like, I don't understand why he really did that. And you know, like, it's unfortunately for a lot of people, they fell for volume. They fell for volume based metrics. And, you know, a lot of people said, hey, he led the league. He led the nation in missed tackles forced. And that sounds great. Until you realize that he probably attempted more rushes than every other running back in college. And so that's why I don't look, you know, like, I don't look at things like total numbers. I don't look at total yardage. I don't include that in my running back model, because Totally. That was one of the first things I ever figured out about running backs. It doesn't matter if you run for 2,000 yards or 200 yards. It matters in what you do in those plays that you touch the ball. And in Absolutely. Those plays, he was not very efficient. His big time run rate was under a sub 6%. That's not where we want to be. We want to at least be 8%, 9%, 10%. That's where we start getting into. Obviously, no one's comparing him to Jeremiah Love. Jeremiah Love was around the 11% range. You know, obviously, we would love for anyone to be anywhere close to that. He had 46 receptions, but he only had 370 receiving yards. Like, this is not overly productive, overly efficient. This is someone who's catching the ball near the line of scrimmage, and that's why you were saying, like, he has amazing hands. I'm sure he doesn't have that many drops. Like, he can catch the ball. He is not some route runner a la Jahmyr Gibbs or anybody like that. No. So you're talking about a guy who's fairly small, who isn't fast, and isn't overly efficient or overly good in any one aspect of football. He's just kind of there. And, you know, like I said, I think people fell for the volume. I have him at RB7 right now. You have him at RB10. There were people that had him at RB2. They're all of a sudden going to forget that they ever had that at RB2. They never even talked about Emma Johnson. They never liked him. He's going to be like their RB5 at the very least, RB6, you know, and everyone will forget that they ever liked him. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, I almost feel bad. Like I said, I try not to hate on anyone, but like I've posted so many things trying to show people like the efficiency is not there. And with running backs, we need efficiency.
It's super important. And I wish that it had gone a little bit differently for him. Would have been a lot more fun if he was able to churn out some of the results we were expecting. But yeah. Alas, we live in the world that we live in. just some other quick thoughts from me before I hand it over to you for, you know, some other running back names that you like. I was a little disappointed that we didn't see testing from Jonah Coleman. One of the things I wrote about in the Combine preview article was that because, you know, weather stuff probably factored into why he didn't make it down to the Senior Bowl. There were a lot of guys and even, you know, people like us, you know, there to cover the event that didn't make it down because of all the weather. You know, we didn't really get a chance to see him. And one of the things that I was fascinated about specifically was like, how fast is he? Not because speed is like a crucial element to his game per se. I mean, he is a stout guy. He's not particularly tall, but he's big. He's more of that bowling ball type of runner. Speed's not the most important thing, but I was at least curious just to know, especially as it pertains to like speed score and stuff relative to his size. I wanted to know that, and we didn't get any information from that. That was kind of a bummer. But otherwise, just a couple names that I thought were pretty good from watching the drills. Damon Claiborne from Wake Forest. He's not somebody that I, you know, knew a ton about, but I thought he ran pretty solid routes. He showcased some pretty good burst on a lot of those cuts and stuff, too. And then also, I want to give a specific shout out to Roman Hemby, the guy from Indiana University. But more importantly, before he transferred to Indiana University, a member of the mighty Maryland Terrapins football team. Yes, anybody who plays football in the state of Maryland is automatically going to get my boost of confidence. Shout out Maryland. Shout out Roman Hemby. I thought he looked pretty good in those receiving drills too. I think he's got a chance to latch on somewhere and be a pretty good depth piece for a backfield. Do you have any names that you would like to highlight as, you know, standouts or, you know, some other maybe disappointments from the running back position?
Pretty much one. And I mean, like, this is not the greatest running back class, you know? And so unfortunately, I mean, I have other names that you can mention. Roman Hemby is in that list. And Herms and I go way back as Herms has been, sliding into the Debbie devotional chat, saying, "Hey, when are you going to mention Roman Hemby?" You know, it's for years now. So, we've definitely had some Roman Hemby back and forth already. The funny thing is, I was not the biggest Hemby fan. He's actually, you know, has done better in recently than even what he was doing when he was at Maryland. And so I don't hate him, but he's not in a spot where like I'm going out of my way to draft him. You know, you start getting into like the fourth and fifth rounds and stuff, I don't care what you do at that point in rookie drafts. Like I'll take him. Maybe even in this class, maybe you could convince me he's a third rounder. I haven't actually like tried to sit there and put together five rounds of rookies just yet. So I'll have to see what happens with that. And then I just want to pump your brakes with Demond Claiborne a little bit. He's 5'10", 188 pounds. And so he did run a 4.37, which is nice, but he's 5'10", 188 pounds. And the weird thing is, you know, I talk about big time run rate with Jeremiah Love and with all these other guys. The crazy thing is with Demond Claiborne, he runs a 4.37. All I've heard about for years now is how fast he is and all that. Somehow, some way, I'm guessing because of his size, his big time run rate is a 5.75%. That is not good. Like, this is not someone who's breaking off big plays. And so it's like, if you can't break off big plays in college, how do we expect you to do it in the NFL? But not to be too negative, I do have one player that I'm just hoping and praying can see an NFL field. Some team will give him some kind of job to do, and that's Eli Heidenreich out of Navy. He is the weirdest profile because, once again, Navy. You know, they're running triple option. They're doing all that. But, I mean, his numbers are off the charts. I don't get into yards per route run all that often. I actually prefer it for running backs than I do for wide receivers. Like, it's everyone's favorite metric for wide receivers, and yet I actually kind of hate it for wide receivers because I feel like it's more to do – or it's just as much to do with your quarterback as it is the receiver. Because if the quarterback can't get the ball to the receiver, then does it matter how many routes they ran or, you know, whatever it is. But with running backs, it's a little different because most of the time it's right around the line of scrimmage. It's pretty easy, dinks and dunks. And so I like it for that. Jeremiah Love at a 1.83 yards per route run this year. Jadarian Price, 1.23. Jonah Coleman, 1.73. Emmett Johnson, 1.27. Eli Heidenreich, 4.73 yards per run. And obviously, a lot of that has to do with the triple option and all that kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is, he has 11.2 scrimmage yards per attempt. Like, this is a guy who can run. He ran a 4.45, I believe it was. 4.44, 40. At 6 foot, 198 pounds. So he's not huge, but he's not small either. He's kind of in that tweener size that we're getting closer to each year. Like, you know, obviously teams are getting more and more okay with your Jahmyr Gibbs, your James Cooks, and Devin Achans, and whoever else. And I'm obviously not comparing him to those players, but you want to talk about the best receiver in this running back class? It's Eli Heidenreich. I don't care if they use him as a receiver, as a running back, or whatever. Like, I think he can actually do something. So I think there's a chance that Heidenreich, after that showing and everything, could actually get better draft capital than expected and could actually jump Emmett Johnson for me when it's all said and done in my rankings. That has not happened yet. I'm not guaranteeing it, but I think it is possible. And I've said it a million times at this point, this offseason, just please, NFL teams, just give him a shot.
Absolutely, man. Definitely another name for folks to keep track of as we go through this evaluation process with this 2026 rookie class. Bit of a longer episode we're dealing with here, folks, but on the other side of our commercial break, we will get into some discussion about the wide receivers and dig into some of the key names there. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast. Don't go anywhere.
Yo, 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 how's it hanging? C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes Podcast here to ask you a question. Have you wanted to get in on some NFL action, but don't live in a state that has a sports book? Well, we have great news. Our newest partner, Novig, is America's number one sports prediction market, offering better odds than sports books in over 35 states. If you're looking to tail some of our plays for the NFL playoffs and all sorts of other sports, new players on Novig can get a free month of an FTN GOAT subscription when they sign up and use promo code FTN with their first purchase. Plus, you'll get 50% off your first purchase up to $25 in Novig cash. All you gotta do is download the Novig app, enter code FTN before making your first purchase of $50 or less, and the discount will automatically apply. Also, your promo code for that free month of an FTN GOAT tier will be in your email inbox before you know it. What a deal! We look forward to having you play on Novig with us this year. Be sure to check it out and use that promo code FTN.
Welcome back to the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. I am still Herms. He is still John. And we are still talking about the fallout from the 2026 NFL Combine. And we're now going to get the ball rolling over to these pass catchers, starting first with the wide receiver position. And I think, you know, coming into the event, there was a pretty clear tier of like four, depending on who you ask about how they feel about Casey Concepcion or whatever, like five receivers who were pretty sure going to go in the first round. It was interesting to see how they would kind of separate themselves. But I think, at least for me, I'll start positive because there are a couple negatives with, you know, the quote unquote elite tier. I really liked what we saw out of Mekhi Lemon from USC. I mean, he didn't end up doing a lot of the actual testing and stuff, but he did go out there and do some of those drills, and especially like in the gauntlet specifically, like that straight line speed, that concentration, his ability to just bam, 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 bam. He looks every bit the part of a guy that can function in an NFL offense. You know, I think a lot of people throw this out as a player comp. I try really hard to not do things that sound hyperbolic, but I'm on Ross St. Brown, also a former USC receiver with a very similar skill set. And again, even though he didn't put up a 40 time or anything like that, just what he did in the drills, he showed everything that I needed to know. And I currently have him as my wide receiver one. I think he is probably my favorite guy in this class just because, I don't know, I think I also like these kind of smaller guys. Maybe there is just like an archetype bias at play here, but were you also impressed by what we got out of him? And obviously, you know, from there, if you want to bring up, you know, some of these other names of these guys, feel free, but I don't know. That was just my favorite.
Yeah, I didn't see anything there. I mean, it seems like people are trying to put like hits out on Lemon right now. If you go on the timeline, you know, it's weird. You know, he had a weird interview where he's like, you know, moving around, shifting his eyes and everything. Who knows? I mean, people react differently to, you know, being in the spotlight and everything. Luckily, that's not a part of Beth. I don't count that against anyone when I'm grading players. So, yeah, I didn't see anything that like turned me off of Lemon, you know, during this process or anything like that. I wish that he would have run. I'm guessing he's probably going to do it as pro day. If he doesn't do it as pro day, I am going to count it as a red flag. I do actually believe that he lacks high end, like top end speed. So I wonder, and he could shut me up really quick if he just runs at his pro day and goes and runs a 4.39 or whatever, then I'll be okay, I was absolutely wrong. I wonder if he actually has that top end speed. And you know, I think he might be trying to mask that, you know, especially like we saw how fast these running or these wide receivers were. You know, we literally the fastest wide receiver class ever at the combine. And, you know, there's like one guy or a couple of guys that were above a 4.6. Everyone else was. And I think I said it last night. There was 25 wide receivers that were faster than a 4.5 40. There was, I believe, 11 that were faster than a 4.4 40. That's just how insanely fast this class was. The only thing I have against Lemon is he was a slot mostly. He was mostly in the slot for his college you know, career. And this past season, you know, his best season, he had, what, 1,200 yards, something around there. Only 150 of those 1,200 yards came in the intermediate routes, came from intermediate routes. He really doesn't have much of a route tree in the intermediate profile because he's not asked to do that very often. He does a lot of your, you know, your slants and your sluggos and things like that. And so you'll see a lot of his yardage, most of his yardage comes from really close to the line of scrimmage or really far away from the line of scrimmage. You don't see anything in that intermediate. And that's really the only thing that keeps me from having him in that top tier where I say, oh, he's my wide receiver one. You know, I like the player. I think he's exciting. He's obviously going to get drafted well. I do not hate this player by any means. But that question mark is the only thing that says he's going to have to work to become that. Now he's young. He's only, you know, the third year player and everything. So he can absolutely work on that and become a better player in the NFL. I don't think it's going to be year one though. And so like, I still have Jordan Tyson. I know people are concerned about him. He obviously didn't run any and do anything at the combine except for the bench press. And people were giving him crap for his form, but regardless of his form, at 6'2", 203 pounds, I believe, he put up 26 reps of 225 on the bench press, which is one away from DK Metcalf's record. So, and once again, DK Metcalf is much bigger than Jordan Tyson. So, you know, form be damned, he's strong. And, you know, that's what you want to see from your ex wide receiver, from the guy that can do it all over the field and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, he's not running because of this hamstring injury that he had. He doesn't want to re-injure it. I don't think it's a matter of it's still bothering him, but it's just because he passed all of his medicals and everything. Like, I haven't heard a single thing about his medicals being bad. One of his major injuries that people were concerned about was his collarbone injury. He just put up 26 reps on the bench press. I don't think his collarbone's bothering him at all, so I don't think we have to worry about that too much. Obviously, a hammy can happen to any player. And then the ACL tear, he's going to be 3 years removed from the ACL tear by the time he actually plays in the NFL. I'm not going to be overly concerned about that. We've seen so many players go on tear an ACL and then have amazing careers. So Tyson's still my one. Carnell Tate ran slightly slower than we expected, but honestly, I never had him pegged as some burner or anything like that. In fact, I always said Tate was going to be one of the least athletic guys until this year. This year changed my mind on Tate. And I think that he actually did get more athletic than he was, if he was hitting the gym hard or whatever it might've been. But he never was like, oh yeah, he's your burner. He's your guy that's going to go make someone look silly or anything like that. He's a contested catch. He's like more of your old school X, you know, like prototypical X kind of player. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I like those players, and Carnell Tate's probably one of the better versions of that player, even playing with a possibly generational talent. And I do not throw that word around very often. I'm not, in fact, I don't even know if I've called anyone generational in the past generation, but Jeremiah Smith very well may be generational. And even playing with that and MHJ and Emeka Egbuka and all that, even with all that, he still showed out. So I like me some Carnell Tate. I'm not going to hold his 4.53 against him at 6'2", 192 pounds. Like, it's fine. It's fine. He's going to be just fine. So those are still my top three guys. Nothing's changed from the combine. I know people are kind of getting down on Tate, but I think they'll come back around once they see the draft capital he gets.
I think, you know, and that was definitely one of the things that, you know, needed to come up in the show, because so many people are focused on this 40 time. But like you said, if it's not a crucial component, like to a player's game, and if it's not something that we necessarily expected them to test well at to begin with, it shouldn't be that big of a detriment. Like, I still have Tate at number two. I kind of flip flop between him and Lemon just because I really like both of them a lot. It's just that they're so different, so it's kind of like a flavor of the week thing in my mind. But I also have Tyson within my top three as well. Definitely very solid as far as that goes. But I do want to talk about one of the other names that people lump into this category, but the segue with Carnell Tate was just too good to pass up. So if we take that same logic and apply this to Malachi Fields coming out of Notre Dame, look, a lot of people, like, I've written about him, you know, in the articles that I did when I was down covering the Senior Bowl. I had mentioned he was my favorite receiver there. I thought he did a really great job. I thought, coming into it, I was like, okay, this is like an X receiver. That's basically all he's going to be, whatever. But he did a lot more with his route tree in a lot of those drills. I think that he did a really good job of gaining separation earlier on in some of these routes against defenders, which is definitely a pretty big knock against him. And I was like, okay, if this is legit, let's see how this combine goes for him, and let's see if this, you know, sort of bubbling enthusiasm around him sneaking into the first round is real. I'm not entirely sure what we saw is necessarily going to guarantee that anymore, but I do think to some degree, though, when we talk about these guys, especially these big body X receivers who are way more adept at doing things in air and using their hands and their ball skills to win that way, I don't particularly care that Malachi Fields went out there and ran a 4.61 40 yard dash. I didn't think he was a burner either. Just like with Tate, like, these guys are big dudes. They're functionally fast. Like, I mean, they're going to be professional athletes. Of course, they're fast compared to everybody else, but like, Not so much so that it's a huge ding against them, but there is clearly a bit of a difference in terms of, you know, the overall perception and also production when we're talking about Tate versus somebody like Fields. But generally speaking, did Fields' athletic testing do anything negative for you? Because for me, like, I kind of just left him where he was. I really like him. I think he's going to be an interesting guy, but I had him roughly around like my wide receiver 9 or 10 before, and I think that's just kind of where he's going to end up landing now.
Yeah, and I actually have him at wide receiver 10, so I'm right there with you. No, honestly, nothing changed for me. In Beth, I don't actually just use 40 time. 40 time means nothing to me. I use height adjusted speed score, and I just hit something. I don't know if that's going to come over the microphone or not. but height adjusted speed score is a way for me to try to like level the playing field for everyone. If you're Brennan Thompson and you're 5'8", but you run a 4.26, or if you're Malachi Fields and you're 6'4", but you run a 4.61, I want to be able to say, like, you know, how does that really convert to like what we're looking for the NFL? And the thing is that Malachi Fields actually has a higher height adjusted speed score than Carnell Tate does, even though he ran a 4.61, but he did it at 6'4", 218 pounds. 6'4", 218 compared to Carnell Tate's 6'2", 192. So you're actually talking about, you know, a 30-pound difference almost here. And yet, you know, we're not seeing that much of a drop-off of speed. So, you know, like, he's obviously big enough to where he can bully people. He can do so many things that a lot of these smaller guys aren't going to be able to do, but he's just not going to go routes and burn these guys either. So, you know, like, I like this wide receiver class. Fields has always been kind of like a sleeper of mine. In fact, I mean, I definitely have receipts from years ago mentioning, like, actually Jim Nagy before, when he was the Senior Bowl director, I actually reposted a tweet from 2 years ago. He was saying like, hey, I kind of ran out of film to watch. Who should I watch? And I mentioned, there was four names. I wish I could remember all of them, but I remember it was Eric McAllister was one that I said, you need to watch. And remember, this is 2 years ago. I said Eric McAllister and Malachi Fields. And there was two other ones, and I do not remember who they were. But even back then, I was a big fan. We've obviously seen we've seen Daniel Jeremiah, Dane Brugler talking about these guys being drafted early. We've seen Malachi Fields be comped or you know, mocked in the first round of the NFL draft. I don't know if that's going to happen anymore after a 4.61 and everything. You know, these teams do covet speed, but I've always looked at him as a second round kind of wide receiver. And so that being said, I really think, you know, wide receiver 9, wide receiver 10, somewhere around that range, it's time to go ahead and click on that Fields name. And no, the 4.61 did not turn me off of that. And I wanted to apologize to the listeners, because there's never going to be a podcast that I'm on where it goes short. It's always going to go long. So I just wanted to apologize to people. Like, all I do is talk, and I love football, and I love talking about these prospects. And so hopefully you guys appreciate that. We're just going to sit here and talk about these guys, and it's going to be a long one.
And plus, like there are a lot of players. There's a lot to get into. A lot of stuff happened at the combine. So, like, I
think folks know at this point that Herms is a bit of a yapper as well. So it's
definitely, it's a two-way street as far as that goes. But yeah, no, I think everything you said about Fields, I am very much in lockstep with, particularly the fact that, you know, kind of like we were talking about, we want to see them do good in the areas that accentuate their skill set. And I think, like, the vertical was still very strong from him. I still really like Fields. I think people are getting a little bit too in their heads about this whole thing. And if you are heavily discounting him because of this speed, then you probably didn't do a lot in the way of watching his tape to begin with anyways.
He actually ran a 6.983 cone. I said before that Emmett Johnson at 6'2", 202 pounds ran a 7.32. And Malachi Fields at 6'4", 218, ran a 6.98, the third fastest time in the three cone in the class. Unfortunately, only six wide receivers ran the three cone, so we can't really say it's overly exciting. But anything sub seven is always considered a quality score. So even without everyone doing it, we can still say, like, hey, he's athletic. He's agile. Like, he might not be top speed athletic, but he's still agile. He can get it done.
Definitely so. And, you know, speaking of guys who are just that level of burner speed, one of the other guys that I thought was pretty good, just to sort of rapid fire a few names that I really liked before we get some of your names that you enjoyed. Zachariah Branch, the receiver out of Georgia. You know, he's not big or anything, but getting out there and not only putting up a 4.35 40 speed with, I think it was a 1.50 10-yard split. He took that speed and showcased its functionality really well in those receiving drills. One of the things that I was very impressed by was just how quickly he explodes off of those cuts on those routes. Like, he really just kind of jumped off the screen in a lot of those drills. And I think, like, yes, he's a very small guy. He's well under 6 feet tall. He's well under 200 pounds. But I think if a team is willing to take a chance on him just as one of those short area weapons, a guy that you can just deploy out of the slot, get the ball into his hands quickly and kind of just let him do his thing, there is a chance for him to sort of overcome some of those elements and be a contributor. I think a lot, and maybe it's a little bit lazy just because we're talking about, you know, really short receivers and it's easy to kind of lump them all together, but it's kind of similar to like what we saw out of Wandale Robinson, like a guy that I constantly defend at this point, which is ironic because I wasn't a big fan of his coming out of college, but since he's been in the league, I've been very impressed at, you know, how he's been able to grow. But like guys like that, who no matter what their size is, as long as they're able to demonstrate functionally what this speed can do, if you just give it to me, I think Branch absolutely nailed that. I also think, Casey Concepcion did a pretty good job, you know, with his, you know, little gauntlet drills well. And then if I am going to spin it negatively just a little bit, one of the names that we had kind of alluded to when talking about that big group of elites earlier, Denzel Boston, man, like he didn't do anything. And I really wanted to know, what's this dude's speed going to be like? What is the size that he kind of brings to the table? And where are those two things going to marry? And because he didn't do a lot, we didn't get to fill in those gaps. So when it comes to my receiver rankings, to be quite honest, I have a tier of just Lemon, Tate, Tyson, Concepcion, but then I have Boston alone just in his mini tier now, because without getting any of this information, I just don't really know what to make of him from a profile standpoint. So, you know, you feel free to take the reins in whatever direction based off of what I said, or if you just want to mention some other names that I didn't bring up. But, you know, those are kind of the guys that stuck out to me a little bit. What about for you?
Well, there was always a chance that Casey Concepcion was shorter than listed in college. That happens quite a bit, especially for some of those like 5'10", 5'11" guys. They're listed like that, and then they come to the combine and they're 5'9". And so, like, not to say that 5'9" is the death knell. You couldn't possibly be good or anything like that. Who's the guy you were talking? Oh, Zachariah Branch. Unfortunately, yeah. He is 5'8", and there's not too many 5'8" guys that are good in the NFL. But it doesn't mean it's impossible. But with KC Concepcion, he's actually 5'11 and a half. So, you know, like, he's almost 6 foot. He almost passes the Herms test. He's right there at least. And I think that, like, that was at least a step in the right direction for him. Like, don't be small. He didn't actually, you know, he didn't run, so we have no idea what his speed is, but I think we know he's fast. I don't think that's like anything of concern for him. He had an amazing year at Texas A&M. He was always kind of a gadgety guy his first couple of years, and it was kind of a question of like, who is he going to be? Can he be an NFL player? I think he kind of answered that question this year in his junior season. I don't know that we have that answer from Zachariah Branch. I still believe that he's more of the gadgety player that you're looking at, but I think Casey Concepcion is a little different. And then as far as Boston, you're saying you have a tier after those, like, you know, the top guys and everything. I actually have them substantially lower than that. My comp, and it's, I mean, it really hasn't changed, and him not running almost makes me believe it even more. My comp for him has always been and continues to be N'Keal Harry. And I have a secondary comp of Terrace Marshall Jr. So I, yeah, I mean, and I'll, Yeah, it's honestly, like, if you go look, you know, whether you're a film guy, a numbers guy, whatever, just go look at the comparisons and think in your head N'Keal Harry, think in your head Terrace Marshall Jr., and then go watch Denzel Boston or go look at his numbers, and you're never going to be able to get that out of your mind ever again. Right or wrong.
You know, when it comes to these receivers, before we move over to tight end, is there absolutely anybody else that you want to mention that stood out to you during the combine?
I mean, there's a lot of small school guys that people are falling in love with, FCS guys. People are falling in love with Bryce Lance. They're saying that he's going to be the next Christian Watson. Well, I think we're like idolizing Christian Watson a little too much and thinking about like maybe the couple big games that he's had. And the thing is that Bryce Lance is probably like, we have Christian Watson at home more than we have Christian Watson. So I would just pump the brakes and say, like, let's not get overly crazy with that. Jeremy Bernard was a pleasant surprise. He's always just kind of been up there in my rankings. In fact, I have him ahead of Denzel Boston. And he's got kind of just always been there. And yet he's always been like the least sexy profile that you could ever say. You know, you're sitting there looking at the PPR points per touch. You're looking at the market share and everything. And he never hits like elite numbers and anything. But he's just kind of one of those good guys. Actually, his PPR points per touch in his best season are pretty solid. But he's just kind of one of those guys that are, they're just kind of there and they just always seem to like earn targets and they always seem to do whatever. I always kind of assumed that he was not overly athletic. He went out at 6'1", 206 and ran a 4.48, a 1.52 shuttle, 10 yard split. I mean, and then a 6.71, the fastest three cone in the class. Now, once again, only six wide receivers did it, but once again, anything sub seven is good. 6.71 is definitely a good number. He should be happy about that. I think it shows that he's going to be a wide receiver that we want to draft in these classes, and he's going to be a wide receiver that teams like and will use. There's a reason why, even though no one seems to care about him, no one seems to love him for dynasty purposes, for fantasy purposes, there's a reason why the NFL is sitting here going, hey, he's going to be a second round pick. You know, and it's been that way the entire time. Nothing has changed. He's always been projected right around a second round pick. And so I would say that I was pleasantly surprised that he does have some athleticism there. Other than that, I can't say there's anyone that like changed my mind about anything. Obviously, Brennan Thompson is very small. He's a small boy, does not pass the Herms test. However, he will beat Herms in a race at 4.26 40. I think that's one of those things where like a team is going to covet that. A team is going to cover that speed and they might use it. And so, you know, like he can absolutely be a flex spot for you because he's going to have random two touchdown games or something like that. Like it's going to happen. Now, I can't tell you or guarantee when those games will happen, but he's going to have that kind of play because he has that kind of speed. So I that would be the only thing I'd really say about any of the wide receivers that actually ran or did anything, because a lot of them didn't. There was a lot of names that I wish we would have seen do something at the combine. Maybe they'll do it their pro day. Hopefully. I would have loved to have seen Elijah Surratt do something. Hopefully he'll do it at his pro day. But yeah, I think we can get in the tight ends because there's a lot to talk about for the tight ends, even though we're already over the hour mark.
It's all good. It's all good. And yo, when it comes to teams coveting speed, I think teams are really going to like what we got out of Kenyon Sadiq out of Oregon. Now I'll be honest with listeners. The tight end class is not one that I am, you know, super familiar with. I know a little bit about some of the guys that are toward the top. So some of the deeper names, probably going to rely on your expertise as far as that goes, but like Sadiq, man, 4.39 seconds in the 40-yard dash, especially at his size, is absolutely nuts. And another thing that I, you know, came across on the social media timeline while the combine was going on, in terms of top speed during the 40-yard dash, Kenyon Sadiq hit 23.2 miles per hour, which is the same sprint speed that Jahmyr Gibbs hit. And Jahmyr Gibbs, mind you, 199 pounds versus Sadiq's 241. So, like, that is the otherworldly speed we are talking about when it comes to Sadiq. Now, one of the things that I was really curious about coming into the combine was like, how is he going to look in some of these blocking drills if he chooses to participate in some of those? Because I do look at him as more of a catch first tight end at the next level. But when you're that good of an athlete, I don't even care anymore. I don't care if he can block. Dude, he's that sort of alien profile with that level of athleticism is just nuts. Like, so when it comes to Sadiq, the thing that I had put, you know, in the article kind of wrapping up, you know, some of my thoughts from the combine was the fact that he didn't move up a ton for me in the grand scheme of things. But what he did solidify for me is that he doesn't have to be a first round pick, like only in tight end premium formats. Cause I think a lot of people, when it comes to the tight end position, you have to be very skeptical about when you choose to spend a first round pick on that position, just because of the volatility and everything that kind of comes with it and the difficulty we have truly projecting which guys are going to be the elite dudes. But at this point, how could you not take him in the first round, regardless whether it's just tight end premium, we're talking one QB or super flex formats at this point? I think it's pretty safe to say he's locked into that top 12.
So I've actually been very anti Kenyon Sadiq in the first round, just because it's well, I mean, it is getting more and more difficult, especially after the combine, to have that kind of stance. But here's the thing. All right. So he's one of the youngest players in this class overall, not just tight ends. He's 20.8 years old. He's not even 21 yet. And the funny thing is, like you were saying, you're not sure if he's a two-way player or whatever. I actually think he's a better blocker than he is a receiver right now, which is hilarious because obviously the only thing that people care about right now is his receiving prowess. And it's just not there. Before this season, he actually had an ADOT of like 3.4. So that is 3.4 yards past the line of scrimmage is not much. He's not running too many routes. This year it's gone up. I think he hit right around that 10 yard range. That's still, he's not sitting there running, you know, like full on route tree or anything like that. It's a lot of dinks, a lot of dunks. And even then, you know, if you look at it, he was actually surpassed by another tight end on his own team. And who kind of took the role of pass catching tight end. In Jamari Johnson, I think his name is. I cannot remember, at Oregon. I think it's Jamari Johnson. I could be wrong. So it's one of those things where it's like you look at the profile, you look at a picture of him, and you go, oh my God, I want this guy on my team. I need to draft him at 106. Like he's the, it reminds me of David Njoku back in the day when he used to walk around with his shirt off and everything, and everyone would be like, oh my God, that is a man right there. You know, like that kind of thing. He might even, you know, I haven't really seen him with his like actual shirt off. He might even put David Njoku to shame at this point. Who knows? But I think if you actually look at the numbers of what he's done and everything, it's not nearly as sexy as staring at that picture of him. And so I think when you add in his age, you add in the lack of experience, he really only has this one season that you can hold your hat on. There's really nothing else because Terrence Ferguson was there. Terrence Ferguson played over him before that, in previous seasons. So you're really holding on to one year and you're saying, that guy's going to be a stud. I don't doubt that he can be a stud, but people comp him or saying he's as athletic as Vernon Davis and you know, Maryland shout out again, Vernon Davis. Guess what? Vernon Davis in his rookie year and as athletic as he was, had 265 receiving yards in the NFL. In year two, he had 509. Year three, he had 358. Year four, he had 965 yards and 13 touchdowns. I kind of foresee a similar path for Kenyon Sadiq in the NFL. It's not that he can't do it. I don't think he's ready to do it year one. And so that's where I go, why are we drafting him in the first round? But then again, you could say, I'm going to draft him in the first round. I'm going to hold him for 3 years and there, you know, and hope for the best, that kind of thing. I go, let someone else draft him at 106. Because at this point, I mean, he's probably even going to move up ahead Tyson because it's, you know, where have you been? You know, like that kind of thing. People out of sight, out of mind with Jordan Tyson. I have a feeling we've already seen some of the bigger names in the space start talking about 105 Kenyon Sadiq. Let someone take him at 105. Go get someone else. Take Justin Jolie in like the fourth round of your rookie drafts and profit.
Oh, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, even with my enthusiasm of placing him inside the top 12. I don't think I'm ready to go quite that high. I was kind of thinking maybe toward the back end of the first round, if anything else. And also just speaking to, you know, sort of the, you know, the blocking aspect of his skill set, like, one of my big concerns was just he is only 6 foot three and 241 pounds. Like, again, that's big for a regular human being. But in terms of being a tight end, we look at those kinds of measurables. And objectively, he is a slightly smaller guy in those areas. So I think, yeah, like with the amount of growth that he still has to do, like both physically, I guess a little bit, maybe put on a little bit more weight, my guy. And with some of the receiving stuff, it could take a little bit longer. So, you know, definitely important to consider as far as he is concerned. But when it comes to the rest of this position group, man, I mean, I really thought the testing that we got out of Eli Stowers was cool. I learned a little bit about him in this process. He's a really interesting guy. I believe, if I remember correctly, a converted quarterback who hasn't been playing tight end for that long. But, you know, he's somebody that I think stood out really well and even bested Sadiq in some of the other measurables. Just looking at his vertical, Stowers ended up at a 45 and a half, whereas Sadiq, you know, 43 and a half inch.
Sadiq held the record for about, what, 8 minutes or something like that?
And, like, you know, I'm sure those 8 minutes were absolutely magical. But, you know, and even then, in the broad jump, you know, same thing. Eli Stowers, 11 feet, 3 inches. Kenny Sadiq, 11 and 1 inch. You know, like, athletically, like, they're both pretty close together as far as that goes. And also, when we're talking about these two tight ends, one of them won the award for being the best tight end in college football, and it wasn't Kenyon Sadiq. So, right. Talk to me a little bit about Stowers and kind of fill in some of those gaps, because I still have a lot of questions when it comes to him.
So this is one of those things where, like, this is like a truly dynasty level debate here. I think Kenyon Sadiq has the profile to be a better overall NFL tight end than Eli Stowers, but it's going to take time. I think Eli Stowers will be better than Kenyon Sadiq in year one, but I think he is a worse profile than Kenyon Sadiq overall. You know, obviously, like, he's already a fifth year player. How much more can he grow from what he's already done compared to a third year player who's not even 21 years old? We expect growth from Kenyon Sadiq. I don't know if we can expect growth from Eli Stowers, but they both have uber athleticism. Like, they both have that. So it's one of those things where, do you want to take the guy who could produce in year one and profit from that? Or do you want to take the guy who has the better profile technically and you know, it overall should be a better player, but it might take 2, 3, maybe even 4 years before he really hits those numbers that you're hoping for. And so that's where it's truly good dynasty. I'm not even saying I necessarily have that answer right now. Technically I have Sadiq over Stowers. But it's not that much of a difference. And so, like, I really wouldn't argue with anyone that's like, no, I'm taking Stowers over him.
Oh, well, I mean, hey, look, if that debate is very much up in the air, then it's something I'm definitely open to. You know, kind of like I said, still learning the position. But you look at a guy like Stowers and what he was able to do. Like, yeah, if you're hanging athletically with this guy that everybody is having as the talk of the town, then that should definitely reflect well in his favor. I think over the course of time, we're probably going to see people come around to that. If not, you know, it's kind of their loss. But when it comes to these other names at tight end, I'll just quickly say some names of guys that I either liked down in Mobile or thought were kind of interesting on TV at the combine. But just so listeners know, to remind, I'm still not super deep with this class, so take a little bit of grain of salt with some of this. But I don't know, I thought RJ Maryland looked pretty fun. He is a guy that, you know, put together some pretty interesting things out there running in some of those drills. Sam Rauch from Stanford is a guy that I liked a lot at the Senior Bowl. Not necessarily somebody who's like a transcendent athlete by any means, but he has an NFL bloodline. He has, you know, like uncles and like grandparents and stuff that played in the NFL. Like, he definitely has that bloodline.
He's a big boy too. 6'6", 267.
Yeah, dude. And big, like, big I boy. Think like between that frame, the pedigree, and just the fact that, like, I think he just did everything well, just in terms of the basics of what you look for out of a tight end. I think he'll just be a good one. I don't know if he'll ever be a great one, but I get the impression that he is at least going to be a good one. And the other name that, like, look, I don't know a ton about this dude, but just watching the combine, kind of got some sneaky, interesting vibes from Lake McCree. I thought he looked pretty interesting. Not the biggest dude in the world, but I think he ran routes pretty well. But beyond just my, you know, light anecdotal stuff, are there any other names at the tight end position that either stood out for you at the combine or are just guys that listeners need to be a little bit more aware of?
Well, from a Debbie standpoint, there's a lot of names in this class that Debbie players have been talking about for years, or college fans. Even if you're not a Debbie player, if you're just a fan of college football or whatever, you're probably going to know some of these names. Like you were saying, RJ Maryland, he's been mentioned for years. Michael Trigg has been mentioned for years. Daquan Wright at Ole Miss, maybe not mentioned for years, but definitely you're talking about, you know, Jackson Dart and Ole Miss and everything. So you've heard of Daquan Wright, probably. Tanner Kazoil has been a name. It's just Jack Andrews out of Texas. A lot of people are going to mention. Unfortunately, I don't think any of those players are going to actually do much when it's all said and done. I essentially have two more tight ends that like I care about. And that's not to say like I'll throw anyone on the end of a roster if they land into a good spot or whatever. Sure. So like if one of these tight ends that you just mentioned or any of them on the list end up in an amazing spot, of course I'm going to throw them onto a roster. But if we're just talking about in a vacuum, there's technically two tight ends that I care about that we haven't mentioned yet, and that's Max Clair out of Ohio State, and that's Justin Jolie out of NC State. Jolie would be my tight end one if he would get any kind of recognition from the NFL. Now I will say when I first started my process of transitioning my players from Devy to the rookie class, Justin Jolie was considered the 400th player in the class. I was like, obviously not going to be drafted at that point, like undrafted free agent. You know, that's what you would assume. Now he's projected with 101 NFL draft capital. So he's moved up 300 spots in a matter of a month or two. I think he could possibly move up even more. Unfortunately, he didn't run. And that really, I want to make sure. Yeah, he didn't run. And that bothers me because he's kind of in that same Sadiq role where 6'3", 241. I wanted to see him run and he didn't. But I did see people interviewing him saying that, you know, like he talks the talk, he walks the walk, he does all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's not like he didn't walk away without any positives from the combine. And then Max Clair, he was I'm going to say a stud at Purdue, but I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to say. No one's really a stud at Purdue. He was a stud at Purdue, and then he went to Ohio State, and he's behind Carnell Tate, Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Egbuka, like all these players, and he doesn't do that much. Okay, like I'm going to forgive him for that. So, like he didn't do that much this year, but he did still catch the ball. He still did something this year, which is still something to say when you're talking about a guy who in Carnell Tate who's projected to go 7th overall right now. Yeah. And then you have a possibly generational wide receiver ahead of him, Jeremiah Smith. And that's not to say that there's not other talented wide receivers on Ohio State, where it's literally wide receiver, one of the wide receiver use at the very least. So I think originally I was kind of all out on Max Clair. And the more I looked at it and the more I thought about it, I'm like, I gotta forgive his profile a little bit. Because he's playing with these studs at Ohio State, and he went to Ohio State so he could get the recognition that he couldn't get at Purdue. But obviously he was going to do more production wise at Purdue. And so I'm trying to combine those and say what if kind of deal. And that's where I go, okay, I'm still in on Clair as well. So those are like my four that I'm like, give me those guys. And that's what I'm saying. Jolie is not getting the respect of any of those other names. And so I'm like, hey, if I can get him in the fourth round, I actually feel better about that than taking a guy like Sadiq in the first round, just because of the risk of taking that young player who hasn't quite done it yet. At least in the fourth round, I can go, hey, if this doesn't work out, who cares?
No, absolutely. And especially when it comes to Jolie specifically, I do remember there weren't a ton of like quote unquote standout moments down at the Senior Bowl, but he is somebody that when he ran out there for a lot of those full team drills and stuff, he was able to line up in the slot and be a very productive route runner and pass catcher out of the, you know, formation that way, which I think we see it more and more in the modern NFL at this point. It's not just about being a traditional inline guy. If you can kind of flex out even a little bit further and run more diverse routes that way, you're going to bring a slightly different element to the passing game. And I think Joe Lee definitely does that. He is somebody that caught my eye during that process. And I am definitely with you that if he doesn't end up getting a lot of that credit, if he remains in the sort of reputation range that he is now, I'm probably going to end up drafting a lot of them too. Cause it'd be like, as like you were saying, like, why not? If it's going to stay that low, that investment cost is pretty good. You always have to take the chances when it comes to some of these super athletic tight ends. And I think that he definitely falls into that, but that does bring us to the end of our show. Everybody who stuck around, we appreciate you. I'm glad that you tuned in for the whole thing because we got a lot of information out of this show. And I think that it was a very productive conversation. I think we all learned a lot. So, John, I will turn it over to you. Anything that you want to plug, especially because, hey, look, listeners, you know, if you liked them last time, if you liked them this time, and you're just like, man, I got to get more content out of this dude, tell people where they can find you and where they can get a lot more of this awesome analysis.
Well, I'm hoping that I don't ever want either one of you and you or Tyler to miss time, but I'm kind of hoping that I'm the go-to, you know, the go-to fill-in at this point, you know, who knows, but we'll have to wait and see if the listeners appreciate an hour 20 podcast or not, you know, if I get invited back or not, but honestly, I do a lot of stuff at DLF. In fact, I'm getting ready to basically write about this entire class at DLF. I'm doing the entire class, the QBs, the running backs, the wide receivers, the tight ends. I'm going to write about the entire class, and I'm putting out a six article series. I did not say that right. I'm putting out a 6 article series.
There we go.
At DLF. And so I'm going to cover all these players again and even more depth than we did tonight. But also, I have a website called dynastyworkshop.com, and that website has all of these profiles, all of the data. You can make your own charts. You can basically, the easiest way to say it is, if you want me to tell you who to draft, I have that. If you want to tell me who to draft, I also have that. You know, you can do a little bit, you can do your own research, or you can just say, hey, John, tell me who you want and who you like and that kind of stuff. And I can do it as well. So check out dynastyworkshop.com and see what, you know, I have to offer there, but also check out DLF. My article series will be there. And obviously just reach out. I love talking about these players, as you can tell. So just reach out on Twitter, DM me, do whatever. If you ever have a question about a player, I'm happy to talk about them.
Absolutely. That handle is at Dynasty Coach A. Be sure to check him out on the socials. Check out Dynasty Workshop. Check out all of his work over at DLF. And also, like I, you know, talked about a little bit earlier, if you want, you know, some more of my combine thoughts that we didn't get into with some of this, ftnfantasy.com is where you can find my article and all sorts of other fun things. What a conversation. What an episode. I cannot wait until we get into things again next week when Tyler O hopefully returns and we get into our preview of NFL free agency. We're already at that point in the calendar, folks. So stay tuned, get stoked, and this has been the Crossing Routes Podcast. Think about it before we come, just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping late, you haven't won.